Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show. It's a Chevy Power Play. Now get over $8,600 total savings on a 2018 Chevy Silverado 1500 Crew Cab LT, plus an additional $2,500 in competitive owner cash. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and score. We have White Sox baseball tonight on NBC Sports Chicago. They look to make it 3 out of 3 against the Angels. James Shields, with scouts in attendance, goes to the bump. White Sox pregame live begins our coverage at 8:30. Jason and Stoney have the call from SoCal at 9. Cubs offense did just enough. John Lester did the rest. Lester defied the stat nerds and ended the Northsiders' two-game slide. Meanwhile, your daily Darvish update. Could he actually be progressing? And should we be concerned about Chris Bryant's shoulder yet? And no training camp today, meaning no progress on Roquan Smith's rookie contract. And now that only 2 first-round picks remain unsigned, is it time to start getting worried about the holdout? And welcome in to Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. I'm David Kaplan. Hope you had a good day. Panel for today's show, he is veteran sportsman Jordan Bernfield. He is former Cub, and he's our analyst here at NBC Sports Chicago. He is the great Doug Glanville. Chris Black from ESPN 1000. All right, let's get started with some baseball conversation. Cubs needed a win and got one today as their ace went to the hill. John Lester was simply outstanding, pitched into the 7th inning. And, Doug, that's what aces do. When you're struggling, they find a way.
Yeah, they really are the streak stoppers, and they find ways to pull that victory out of a scenario where your offense is not there. You know, you're still able to get that victory. He gave them just enough, and really critically, he didn't walk a single batter. And even though the pitches were over 100, every key pitch he needed to make, he was aggressive. And I'd say his defense, the defense played very well today, so that he was very effective once he had to attack the zone. They put the ball in play. They were closing out all the plays.
You know, Joe Maddon talked about it after the game that they got lucky, and some games this season where they haven't been lucky, they've lost. To me, kind of if you watch the way Lester performed and the rest of the team performed today, it kind of seemed as if the Diamondbacks gave them that win opposed to the Cubs taking it. And you can't spoil these Lester outings.
How can you say that when Lester went out and pitched so well?
He was great. But if you look at the game in the 7th, 8th, 9th inning, for the great performance you had, 103 pitches, he gives up a home run on the last pitch. Now you're tied 1-1. It's almost as if he didn't get enough from the offense. You can't waste the Lester performances because he was outstanding.
Yeah, the
today.
Offense wasn't great.
Yeah, they needed 6 out of them. They got 6 out of them. They needed a start without walks because when the Cubs starter is not walking guys, it really is nice, isn't it? But, you know, that's the kind of performance that you needed, certainly. And I think, you know, after the last start, it was sort of like, let's fit the narrative that John Lester's peripherals aren't as good. And so, oh, now he's coming back to earth. I thought he just was mechanically all over the place in his last start against the Cardinals. That's why I thought he struggled as much as he did. I think that everyone's just kind of looking for a bad start from him to go, well, that's what's going to happen to him the rest of the way. I look at him as a veteran pitcher who knows what he needs to do to get through an outing, even if he doesn't have his best stuff. And they play good defense behind him. That's always helped him out. Yeah,
and this was a true home victory, right? This is a game could go the other way, right, if you're on the road, right? But the fact you had that last opportunity and the mistakes uncharacteristically about a fantastic infield in Arizona, they really threw the game away ultimately. But the fact that that home advantage really played strong in this game.
Yeah, I thought Al Mora made a really good play. That ball, that knuckleballed out to
really
him at center.
One.
Right. Really tough play, diving catch. Thought the infield did a nice job. And then, as Chris said, you know, you catch a break. This play here by Al Mora, that's not an easy play, right?
Well, not only is it knuckling, but when you're diving straight at a ball, depth perception, it is really tricky. But look what's behind him. Nothing. There's just green pasture. So it's not a play where you're diving and trying to corral it or sliding and blocking it. If you miss that ball, you got at least 3. So it was a great play by him, but had to time it perfectly to execute it.
You concerned at all about the offense?
No, I haven't really been concerned. I know that the up and down, you look on early on in the season, the bullpen has really been probably the most consistent aspect of the team. But you know, it's part of it. It's ups, it's downs. Rizzo, Bryant has been, you know, mixed around. They haven't had that sort of 3-4 punch injuries. But I've loved how guys have plugged in and gained the confidence, you know, whether it's a Hap or someone sort of finding it, because these are the guys that are, you know, second half, get later in the season, that have been rested, and you still have that depth. I'm more concerned just about the health issue overall.
You know, the team depth is great, because if you look overall with the record and the way their run differential is, this offense is really good, let's be honest. But if we look back to the playoffs last year and what the Cubs have ahead of them this season, is it concerning at all, like Cap said, that the offense sometimes turns off altogether, opposed to some guys still pulling through, leading the way? Because, you know, I'm always looking at big picture with the Cubs. Championship windows now, you got to get as many championships as you can within the next 5 years or so, right? So if you look at the offense, can they come through with a game like today and win when they're not really hitting the home run? Can
four
they manufacture
runs in 3 games?
Right, like that's what's concerning to me, because Arizona's a good team. You're going to face better in the playoffs. Can you actually manage and put together some runs when the bats aren't bopping like you usually get from this Cubs offense?
I think we saw that in 2016 in the World Series run. I mean, they got shut out in back-to-back games in the NLCS, and then they scratched across the run of that bunt from Zobrist, and all of a sudden it turned around. So they have shown that even when they go through these odd stretches where they don't score, they find a way in the end to score enough runs. And you look at where they are in the National League. I mean, I think they're leading the National League in runs, OPS, batting average, hits. So, I mean, they're near the top in most categories anyway. I think it's a really good offense. Just sometimes really good offense is going to have a few games like this.
Yeah, and I'd answer that question by saying, yes, I think they can manufacture runs. I mean, some of their assets are these intangibles, their ability to go first to third, for example.
They're incredible. The best in the league at that.
They're incredible. They take those extra bases. Baez and Bryant, I'd say, are two of the best base runners in the National League. And that plays really well in games like this that we see, that even though they weren't, like you said, crisp, they still found a way to win. But overall, you get a lesser performance and you know how to manufacture runs, you could pull some victories out, and you know, that's what the postseason would be all about.
Okay, I choose to live my life in a very positive manner. I wake up every day and I'm like,
right, I hear you.
Hey, I got a job, my health seems good, people I care about are okay, my dogs are good. Okay, but you could wake up today and go, wow, the Cubs are only a game and a half up. Uh-oh, Chris Bryant's shoulder hurts. Uh-oh, sure. Lester's coming off a bad start. Hendricks had a bad start. Chatwood's walked 450 guys. I mean, you could look at it in a negative way. Sure. I choose to look at it a positive way. Right. Where are you on the Cubs with these injuries? Chris Bryant's shoulder. Brandon Morrow says my bicep still is inflamed. There's some questions there.
Well, you know, talking to lifelong Cubs fans and as a player seeing this, it's all perspective, right? If you see the short game, you say, okay, they can win these games. Fine, they can win these. Then you look the long game, because now the Cubs fans have a benefit of seeing a long game all the way to the end. And then you see the Houston Astros, and then you see the Yankees, and you start going, wait a minute, their rotation doesn't match up. So it is somewhat of a perspective. And can the Cubs chain together the short game to create a long game? And I think that's where the worry is with all these injuries.
Yeah, I mean, I think I am a positive person, but I don't think it's negative to suggest that there are legitimate questions. I mean, they have not gotten great performance out of their starting rotation this year.
And they're still 2.5
than John Lester. Right, and they're still 2.5 up. To me, when I look at the way that they've played this year, they're 2.5 up, and they have not gotten great starting pitching other than Lester. Chris Bryant's been hurt a lot of the season. Yu Darvish has barely pitched. Brandon Morrow has been on the DL now twice. To me, if they were fully healthy, and we were talking about this in the green room, I feel like this Cubs team could be 10 games up on Milwaukee, because on paper, if everyone was healthy, to me, there's no question they have the best roster in the National League. But if you start taking players off this team, which is not something that they had to deal with in 16 when they won the World Series, and really hasn't been something they've had to deal with in the last 4 years when they've been good, this is a kind of a new type of adversity for them to deal with. And I don't know whether they can overcome an injury to Chris Bryant in the long term.
Here's our Ankin Law Sports Talk Live poll question. Whose injury for you is the most worrisome? Brandon Morrow, Chris Bryant, Yu Darvish? Go to NBCSportsChicago.com/vote. How do you vote, Chris?
I'm going to vote Yu Darvish, and this is why. If you look at a playoff series, you're going to have Lester go in the first game. The rest of the series, where's your confidence level in the other pitchers going out and starting for the Cubs? It can't be 80-70%, right? Like, if you look at Hendricks, Quintana, if you have to use Chatwood in a playoff series. You're going to need a number two ace to get in there and to help this team get through different playoff series. I get it. Right now, they can win games, absolutely. And you guys have covered all the positives with the offense. But I think a second starting pitcher who's elite, Yu Darvish, that's who they need. That's where my concern would be.
You know, I'm going to go with Chris Bryant. I mean, it's tight. Darvish is a tough one. But because Darvish never, even when he was, I guess, supposedly healthy early on, never really found it, I don't know if that was the Darvish we were going to see this year. So I'm going to shift over to Bryant and the MVP caliber skills and the fact that he's had this recurring issue. And that's a big void to fill. I mean, he's so good in so many facets of the game. He kind of embodies the best of a Joe Maddon offense because he's versatile, but he's versatile with, like, high level of excellence. He's an MVP. So I have to put Bryant up there.
Do you think Chris Bryant takes too much batting practice? Because, you know, you and I were talking at the ballpark, and if you watch tape of him, when he swings, he gets that little whip where you go, well, I wonder if that's bothering his shoulder. And Maddon said, guy wants to live in the cage.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's, you know, he works, you know, hard. And
he does.
And I think, you know, he's always had a kind of cut-off finish. You know, it's sort of his, like, almost like a tennis stroke or something. And I don't know if that's, you know, I'm not speaking medically here, but he's always had a pretty abrupt stop in his finish. And I don't know if that's playing into this. But now when you're seeing this once, now twice, you're starting to worry about long-term. And do you shut him down for a more extended period? Or just try to battle through it and hope for the best.
To me, the Bryant thing, that would scare me the most because I agree with what Doug said. I mean, they've basically played without Yu Darvish most of the year. If he were healthy, that would obviously be great to have. But if you were to lose Chris Bryant for significant time, I mean, even 70% Chris Bryant, which is basically what we've had since the shoulder started bothering him, is a 280 hitter with a 380 on base percentage and may not be hitting for the power that we're accustomed to seeing, but he's still a good Major League Baseball player. He's not an MVP player, but he's a good player. You take that out of the lineup and you replace it with David Bodie or Javi Baez shifting over to third. No disrespect to those guys. I mean, Baez is an MVP candidate, but you're losing a guy that's won the MVP. That's something that I think in the long term, big picture, they can't survive without him.
So are we thinking that the injury to the shoulder is all to why the numbers have been down this year?
I think not getting hit
in the helmet earlier in the season?
Oh, I don't think that, because the first 30 days after getting hit, his numbers were really good.
Yeah, I think the shoulders played a pretty big role. I mean, it's just that extension, and that's his game. He's just, you know, he's got that just ability to have so much coverage. And, you know, keep in mind, this guy works counts, and he's incredible on the bases, and, you know, he does a lot of stuff that really makes this team go.
So as a player, was there ever a rule to, like, how much batting practice, batting cage time you could spend or other teammates would spend where you'd be like, all right, this is too much. We're just wasting time in here.
You know, I would say no. I think it's each their own. I know I tried to pace myself when doing, you know, short toss or hit off the tee or something different. You know, I played with Alex Rodriguez, and they would often have to try to, you know, get him out of there. I mean, he's a curveball machine, and, you know, he put in a lot of work, you know, in spring training. So, but yeah, you could definitely overtax yourself by just
Sammy was a guy.
Yep.
You know, for all that people talk about that era and the steroid era, he worked his tail off.
Right. 9:30 a.m. day games, like clockwork, right in the cage with Billy Williams or Jeff Pentland. I mean, he had his routine. And but, you know, it's just the pacing starts to become important, especially as you get older in the game. You start to figure out, wait a minute, now I got to kind of be, you know, work.
Got to slow down.
Right. Work it efficiently.
All right. Let's talk about trade talks. Zach Britton's off the board. He's going to the Yankees. This morning, Nathan Eovaldi, who the Cubs had scouted on multiple occasions, he's off the board. He's going to the Boston Red Sox for a pretty highly regarded minor league pitching prospect. So where do the Cubs turn? There are reports that they're heavily down the road on Jay Happ, but so are three or four other teams. They've looked at Cole Hamels down in Texas. Now, Cole Hamels' numbers, lousy in Texas, but you take him out of Texas, ZRA's under three.
Well, you know, here's the concern there would be, like with Chatwood. That was sort of how they signed Tyler Chatwood, right? The idea, like, okay, let's just wave away Colorado. Coors Field, the whole state of Colorado. And we'll look at these like road numbers. You know? But it, as anything else, pitching is rhythmic. Even those bad starts contribute to your good starts. So it's hard to look at it in isolation, like bad road, you know, good home. I think Hamill still has something left in the tank to add. I've been a big proponent of you don't necessarily need to get Jacob DeGrom. You can get a really good 2-3 guy and get some depth here and then still be able to perform if a guy like Hendricks and Quintana get back to, you know, get up to that next level that they're capable of.
Cole Hamels has also been in the big spots before.
Yes.
He's won. So I would trust him if he's a guy that had to take the ball in a playoff game, right? Because he's done it before, even though the numbers, you know, splits may not look that great.
Justin Verlander was struggling in Detroit last year.
Exactly.
Went to Houston, got re-energized, and was a beast.
Yeah, and to your point, Chris, I mean, they don't have the capital prospect-wise to go make a DeGrom trade. I don't think so. Then you'd have to trade off the major league team. And if you look at how the Cubs have gotten to this point, I would argue that their bullpen's been consistent, and they probably have the best 25-man roster in the National League. You start plucking guys off that roster.
Okay, so if they said to you, give us Javi Baez straight up for DeGrom, do you do it?
No, I don't think I would.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah. And because listen, DeGrom is great. And this year you could argue he's the best pitcher in the National League. And I understand that there's two more years of control. But Javi Baez has been the MVP of this team. I mean, they're not where they are. I mean, without him and
Agreed.
John Lester.
I wouldn't do it.
In the context of this season, you can't do that. To me, that would be a trade that if you ever wanted to entertain it, that would be an off-season type thing where then you could plan for the next season. Okay, we don't have him, so we're going to use these guys in this spot. But I think any trade the Cubs make should not be one where you try to gut some of that depth, because I think really that's been one of their great strengths this year.
Thanks for being here.
Absolutely.
You're the man. I'll see you for pregame tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
All right. And then there were two. Just two first-round picks remain unsigned. Sam Darnold will reportedly have his deal done soon. So is it time to start panicking about Roquan Smith being the other holdout? And everybody loves Swaggy Matt Nagy. But if the Bears struggle at the start of the season, how long will that honeymoon last? Speaking of love affairs, Jimmy Garoppolo discusses his learning experience. That's all next on STL.
Crank up the heat and turn on STL. On NBC Sports Chicago, host David Kaplan brings his no-nonsense opinion to the table in a half hour on the topics that are trending with our teams.
We got the most mismanaged basketball team in the history of the world.
Which franchise made the gutsiest draft day move?
I think Pack wanted to do this, and he finally got his way.
Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Weeknights at 6 on NBC Sports Chicago.
Tariq told me yesterday that he calls you swag coach. Do you think you have swag?
No, I have zero swag. I try to be me out here with the guys, and, LeBlanc is like the master. He's calling me Swaggy Nagy everywhere I go. I said, well, what the heck's that mean? But I guess it rhymes with my name. They like it. They think it's cool. So it is what it is. And that's why I think we're going to have fun this year. I don't want anybody to take that away. I want their personalities. I want a little trash talk out there amongst each other. I'm okay with that as long as they know there's a fine line, right? And if they do that, they're competing. That's what we're trying to get here, trying to find the best 53 inevitably.
Swaggy Matt Nagy and the Bears continuing camp in Bourbon A. Our postcards to camp brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. So they get a day off today, but they'll go right back at it for three padded practices. Teddy Greenstein joins us from the Chicago Tribune. I was down there yesterday, and while we only had a handful of players on, every one of them said the vibe is so different. Does that surprise you that it's that different?
If I was ever going to be a head NFL coach, I would want to follow John Fox. And I know that John Fox was actually somewhat popular with his players. They saw a different side of him than the public saw. The side that we saw was bumbling and, you know, kind of clownish, to be honest. But you don't hear one bad word about Matt Nagy. Everybody's excited about him. I think they're excited about what they're seeing on the field and the fact that he's so loose and comfortable in public.
And he coaches them, because Taylor Gabriel was on this show yesterday, and he was telling us after we got done, he's like, yeah, I ran a route that I thought I ran properly. He said, and he goes, Matt was very emphatic. He said he came up, no, I want your steps this way, not that way. He goes, I love a guy getting after me. He goes, I like being coached, and the guys have
grasped onto this?
Sure, of course, because attention to detail is necessary, especially when you're implementing a new offense like they are now. And I would also add, when's a better time to be a fan or anyone around a team? Except for the championship level,
yes.
It's when a new, fresh head coach is implementing all these cool offenses and everything. Like, obviously, everyone loves it, and obviously, everything's positive because, of course, it is. He's a fresh face, and everyone's excited for the season.
And they're 0-0.
Yeah, yes. Right. Like, he hasn't lost yet.
Yeah, I mean, if they go out week one and they get slaughtered by 30 points, I think that the Matt Nagy honeymoon is going to be over, right? I mean, the fact is that whenever a new coach comes in any sport, sports fan thinks, oh, that must be better, right? And I'm not saying that he won't be great. He seems really likable. He seems comfortable. Everything that you guys said, 100% certainly seems that way. We have no idea if he's going to be a good NFL coach. We don't. He's never been one. So I think that he's definitely got a good pedigree. I think the fact that Andy Reid thinks he's great and he worked under him is all awesome. We have no idea. And I do remember years ago when Mark Trestman was in his first year and everyone was talking about, oh, this smart football coach from the CFL, and look at all the stuff he's going to do with the quarterbacks. And then weeks later, it's like, this guy's the worst, and get him out of here. Okay. So let's just remember that.
Adam John said yesterday, it's amazing to ask a question. Yes. He goes, I know the public could care less about the media, but we are the conduit for the fan.
Yes.
He said, we ask a question and we get a thoughtful, direct answer. You may not like the answer, but he's going to give you an answer. He goes, and we didn't get that the last 3 years.
Absolutely. And where that helps is, like, look at the coverage of Joe Madden. All right, and he's won a World Series, so in some ways he can do no wrong, and fans are still all over him. But because he explains things so well, that at least gets the media to say, okay, public, he's not an idiot. I know you disagree with some lineup decisions or some bullpen decisions, but hear this guy out. Whereas with John Fox, you just never felt like you were getting anything.
We almost felt like, and he was, we've been around him like in a private setting, nicest guy in the world.
Yeah.
But in that setting, he came off as condescending, and I don't care about your job. I don't care about talking to the fans.
Yeah, and that, it takes more effort sometimes to do that. Just be a decent guy. I know this. With college coaches, you can buy yourself sometimes an extra year or two if you're a decent guy.
Right.
I mean, if you handle yourself well with the public, alums, and media, that's going to get you some extra time. Professional sports probably doesn't matter, but I'm glad he is how he
is. I think it does, though, to some degree, though, right? I mean, I think when a coach is likable, when they're out there as the public face of a team in any sport, pro or college, I think that the media coverage and the fan perception is a little easier for them when they're struggling, if they're nice, as opposed to when, I think the worst thing that can ever happen is what happened to John Fox. He was surly with the fans and the media, and his team stunk. And the combination of the two made him that much more unlikable, right? Because if the Bears had been winning, everyone would have said, oh, he's the gritty Bears coach, and that's just how he
is. You'll tolerate more if you think it's going to help you win. Okay, so how long does the honeymoon last? Is Jordan right that if they go out and lose 38-7 opening night at Green Bay, is the bloom off the rose, or everyone's like, relax?
So it depends on how that happens, because I think Jordan's wrong, because if it happens where he is making good decisions within the game management stuff that John Fox didn't do, right? Like, we all hated the way he used timeouts, the way end of half, all this different stuff.
Right. So if Nagy
if Nagy understands how to do it and they're just not good enough, it buys him a lot of time, especially with being nice, right, and answering questions. And if they get blown out, yeah, that's going to stink. But if he's a good coach and we can kind of tell that he has all the everything lined up, ready to go, and it's not like John Fox,
it's going to be such a –
well, right,
like,
but that's what John Fox – he was a terrible coach with his schematics and in-game management, and that's where the two plus his personality was so bad.
I just feel like there's so often a dividing line. You know this, Cap, from being around hundreds of coaches. There are ones you can hang out with for a minute and you feel like, yeah, I want to play for that guy. That guy gets it. Pat Fitzgerald. Yep. Does anybody leave a session with Pat Fitzgerald thinking he's overwhelmed?
I'll run through a wall for him.
Absolutely. Then you talk to guys, you know, Tim Beckman, and after a minute you say, no. And it just somehow works out that way. Nagy, you say, okay.
We use the word Oski.
Yeah, absolutely. And he, you know, says happy birthday to his mom every year, no matter what date it is. I mean, those kind of weird things. So there are just certain guys you have confidence in and certain guys you don't, and you hope that matches up to where they're successful too.
Okay, Roquan Smith is now one of two first-round picks that have not signed their contract yet. I want to know how much longer this thing drags on, because everything is slotted to avoid things right. like this. And all of a sudden now it looks like Sam Darnold might be closing in. Those are the reports, he hasn't signed yet. Closing in on a deal. You're telling me pick number 8 can't find a way to get on the football field?
So what is it? So what are they haggling over?
Supposedly offset language, whatever that means.
Yeah. It's a bad sign, because then what happens is, you know, let's say he comes in a week or so and then he gets
same agent as Joey Bosa, who held out 30 days.
Oh, right. The difference was Joey Bosa, when he showed up, was awesome. He was really good his rookie year. So if Roquan shows up and is really good throughout the rookie season, then I don't think it's a big problem. But you don't want it to turn into a problem.
And then, because if there are little injuries, everybody's going to say it's because he was being greedy.
Correct.
So then, you know, we've seen situations like that where then you kind of start in the doghouse and it's hard to get out.
But they also have an extra week of camp, right, because they have the Hall of Fame game. So they're going to get one extra preseason game. So I guess not that you want this to happen, but if it was going to happen, at least they have extra time to get this done. Is it unfair to wonder why, you know, the Bears get this pick that's NFL ready, and it's like, why they can't just get – I mean, like, it seems like this stuff happens with the Bears.
I mean, they got Trubisky signed on time.
They did, but they've had this happen with other players.
They got Kevin White signed on time.
I'm just saying, like, why can't we just – I mean, like, what are – right, like we're saying, like, what are we even haggling over? I mean, what does offset language even really mean? I mean, just get the – like, the money is going to be what the money is.
So that means, Cav, if they release him and another team signs him, the offset money of what team B would pay him – yeah.
Correct. Like a coach's offset
Absolutely.
Contract.
Right.
You get
like
fired.
Lovie Smith.
You take another coaching job. How much of the money you owe me do I still get?
That's what they're haggling over. Lovely.
Lovely. So we'll see what happens. But I did have someone down there tell me they believe that he might be in there by Sunday. We'll see.
That's we'll fine. See. Whenever he's ready.
He's going to become the bell cow of that defense.
Everybody loves him as a player. The Bears, you know, got a little lucky. Showed some good discipline, didn't trade up like they did with Mitch,
right.
And a wonderful player fell into their lap at 8.
All right, let's move on. 49ers quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo made some headlines last week over his dinner date with a lovely lady, an inspiring actress, if you will. After the social media firestorm for dating a porn star, Jimmy G discussed it today at Niners camp.
Life is different now. My life off the field, I've never really been big on, you know, being very public with things, you know, even social media. I'm not out there a ton, but, you know, my life's looked at differently. And I'm under a microscope, and it's like Kyle said, it is a good learning experience. Just have to take it in stride. I mean, it is what it is.
Look, this was such a no-brainer. I was arguing with Chris and Danny and Jordan on radio. Look, he could date whoever he wants. He can go home and do whatever it is he does. With
Careful,
whoever he
Cap.
Wants.
It's TV.
It's Careful. TV. I understand. But he's the face of the San Francisco 49ers. They paid $137 million for that face to represent the franchise in a certain way. And when the head coach and the owner wake up and go, really?
Yeah.
You couldn't just take her privately somewhere rather than parading her around. I get where they're coming from.
I think he's the first guy to use it is what it is for dating a porn star.
Correct.
That was a little unusual. You know, the last famous person I've known who dated a porn star was Vincent Chase of Entourage. Mm-hmm. And that also got some attention.
Right.
But I agree with you. I don't mean to be judgy. I'm sure she's a lovely girl, but he probably chose a little better.
Well, right. Or if you want to do that, you're 26, you're single, you're worth millions of dollars, that's fine. Keep it out of the public. I don't be splashed all over TMZ and Page Six.
Well, listen, it's not like he went out of his way to be on TMZ. And the face looked good, Cap. You said if they wake up and see the face, a better, you know, he's the face of the franchise. His face looked good in that restaurant. Vinny Chase in Aquaman, that worked out. I don't understand why you are so offended by the fact that
I
he went
offended.
Out.
I wasn't offended.
But, like, he didn't publicize it before they went out. They just went out. And TMZ is everywhere in Hollywood, and they just happened to catch him. It's
because
not like they were doing anything inappropriate.
World. Yeah,
corporate
world? What do you mean? But they went to dinner. You can't have dinner with someone?
Yeah, I mean,
not a porn star when you're Jimmy Garoppolo.
She's a human too. What's wrong with that? She can't go out to eat.
Look, I'm not trying to offend anyone. She's got like a size 40 triple Z. It's not a good look for the franchise. Keep it public.
That has nothing to do with anything, but let's just say this. It is unfortunate that in today's day and age that a person, should he maybe know that someone could be somewhere and taking a picture of him? Yes. Unfortunately, we live in an age where if you are a celebrity, you literally can't go anywhere.
Joe Namath, we knew who he dated too. If you're a quarterback, people want to know.
Everybody has a phone in their pocket with the camera. So that's just how it is. I mean, if I were him, and I think that there are certain athletes, like when you're a famous athlete or you're a famous person, you have to be at least cognizant of the fact that people have a camera. Everyone has a camera on them at all times, right? Everyone's smartphone is a camera. So you have to at least think that, like, someone's going to tweet it or someone's going to do something with that.
I had a famous college basketball coach tell me he went to dinner with his wife. He goes, I had one glass of wine and I was not driving. He was taking Uber. He said somebody snapped a picture. They tweeted it of him with the wine glass in his hand. And the tweet said, blankety blank, out getting ripped out on the town. He's like, are you serious? Well, I had one glass of wine with my wife. He goes, I said to my wife, that's it. We're not drinking in public, period.
I went to the Cubs game Saturday night with Jeff Brom, the Purdue coach, and I was getting beers. I'm like, you want a beer? He goes, I'll just have a Pepsi. And I'm like, why? He's like, I'm driving. I'm like, but you're just driving downtown. It's just one beer. But that's how they are now. I offered later. I said, do you want one beer off the record? And he declined that as well.
Well, listen.
Smart man.
You're talking about corporate America and the face of the franchise and all this stuff. How's James Harden doing? Pretty good, right? He's got a lot of sponsorships. His jersey hangs in a strip club in Houston. So, what are we really talking about?
Oh, but that's fine. I mean, is anybody criticizing him for that?
Well, what I'm saying is, we'll go after James Harden then. What's the difference, right?
I think
the ceremony to raise the jersey?
Well, it was a great ceremony, Cap. I think your invitation got lost in the mail. I mean, listen, it's...
Two drink minimum.
I just think the whole thing is just blown out of proportion. They went to one dinner. It's not like anything inappropriate happened. They didn't get in a car accident from drinking.
But we're in an environment now from Me Too to this.
But
to
didn't
that.
He handle it well?
Hold on. He didn't
Doesn't
do
he get
anything
credit
wrong.
For handling it well?
Yes.
But perception becomes reality. And when your owner wakes up and goes, oh, God, I've got to deal with this, just keep it private, man.
He should be happy for his completion percentage.
I want to get the interview with her.
Yeah.
Has anybody scored that?
Learning experience. I'd like to know what that really meant.
Absolutely.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.